Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
All right, you guys, welcome. Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. Marty and I are so excited you're here. Hi, Marty. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks.
Excellent. We are trying to work our schedule around yours, you guys. So Marty has to run for a surgery here shortly. But before she does that, we are going to talk about ear mites in cats. Because we promised you this was both a pet show with dogs and cats. And ear mites are a real specific cat thing. And I can remember even when I was a little kid, the only time I've ever had a cat kept scratching and had all that brown, geeky coffee ground stuff in its ears. And I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So talk to us, Marty. Talk to us about kitty cats and their ears.
Yeah, cats are really the favorite host for ear mites. Far more happy host for ear mites than dogs are. Okay. Now, does that mean dogs never get ear mites? No, but almost always when we see an ear infection in a cat, it's ear mites or somehow related to ear mites. And in a dog, it may start as ear mites, especially if it's a young dog. But almost always the ear mites on a dog go, yuck, I'm not living here.
Not where I want to be.
So they move out. Yeah,
so
they move out.
What's the difference? Is it like pH balance? I mean, what's that about?
I don't know. You know, a dog and a cat aren't the same thing, right? Okay. I don't really know why. I've never interviewed an ear mite to really know why they have a preference. But
we need a podcast interviewing the ear mite, Marty. Come on.
Well, I can show you some videos that would tell you that it would be such a loud amount of noise. Because when you see ear mites in a cat, they are crawling in the ear. So if you really want to, like do something icky, Google search ear mites in a cat and you will see some really, I mean, there are hundreds of ear mites in these cats' ears. So it's no question that they are intensely itchy because it is, I mean, I can't even imagine having 1,000 little things parading around in your ear canal.
I'm puking.
It's pretty gross.
Come on, man.
Pretty gross. So cats, especially kittens and cats that are outdoors, are the ones that are most likely to end up with ear mites. But once they have ear mites, and we've gotten rid of them, so we can get rid of them with lots of good medications. Anything that smothers the ear mite will eliminate them. So most ear medications will. There are specific anti-parasite ear medications that include things like ivermectin that do a great job of eliminating them. But really anything that you can do to smother the ear mite, including baby oil, is a good place to begin to at least eliminate the problem. Now, that doesn't get rid of the ear infection. And I will tell you that if we see a cat is middle-aged, anything over a year or two, up to the end of their life, if they have some waxy debris in their ear canal, it's almost always that they had ear mites as a kitten. And although the mites are long, 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 long gone, those ear canals never completely recover. So I take ear mites pretty seriously in kittens. They have to go away. And the sooner they go away, the better the chances are that your cat's going to have a more normal ear canal for the rest of its life. And I've never seen anybody publish on that. I've never seen anybody explain it. I don't understand why it leaves a residual problem. But I can look in a cat's ear and look in the ear, look at the owner and say, did she have ear mites when she was a kitten? And they go, oh yeah, I'm never wrong. I mean, not that I'm never wrong on anything, but I'm never wrong on this because it's always the history that we get. So I think it's fascinating. I don't understand it, but I can tell you it's interesting.
Okay. So let's start with basics. Ear mites are little critters, right? They're an external parasite.
Correct.
Mini-legged, icky little creatures. Why?
To be specific, 8 legs because they are mites. So they're not bugs. Insects have 6 legs. Mites are arachnids. So they're in the spider category. They have 8 legs. Demodex mites, scabies mites, chylidiella mites. Every mite has this many legs. 8. 4 on each side.
In my face?
4 on each side.
Great. Thank you for explaining the legs concept.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things that kind of gets drilled into you when you use the wrong terminology. I have a son-in-law that's an entomologist, and it's very clear that you must have 8 legs to be an arachnid and 6 legs to be an insect. So I'm sorry. I'm just going to Okay. Perpetuate Great. That.
So where do these ear mites in cats specifically come from?
Other like, cats. Other cats.
They're yeah. not out so, there in the world. They're just nope. only hosted in cats.
Well, I mean, other wildlife, ferrets can have them. Other wildlife can have them, but it's only going to be in the ear canal. They don't live anywhere else. Now, when I was in California as a vet student, I worked for a veterinarian who used to say when you treat the ears for a cat with ear mites, you also had to put a drop of the ear medication on the tip of the cat's tail to get rid of the ear mites, because when the cat sleeps and its tail is up near its ear, that it, I'm like, okay, I've never heard that from anyone else, but it's a fun story. So, okay. yes. And you can only see them with magnification. You can't see them with the naked eye. So an otoscope, the little thing that we look down in the ear canal with, has enough magnification to see mites. And if you really want to, you know, make it clear to somebody, you can let them see in it. And a lot of vet clinics now have an otoscope that hooks up to the television screen, so you can show that, or to a screen that's on your phone, so you can show the clients what those look like. Or you can take a little ear swab, look at it under the microscope, and see them in full living color. So mites, you can sort of see Chilidiella mites. If you have really young eyes, like you're under 40, and you have good light, you might see the Chilidiella on the skin of the dog. But again, it's a mite, so it's still an eight-legged creature, but it lives in the scurfy dandruff of the skin. Demodex mites and scabies mites live down in the hair follicles. Ear mites live in the ear canal. So those are very specific places that each of these mites take up residence, and the species that they live with and all the stuff. So we can see Chilidiella on cats and dogs. There's a recently discovered Demodex that we can see in cats. It was only discovered a few years ago, but we've known about Demodex in dogs for many, many years. We know about scabies. When you look for things like Demodex, Demodex is an easy mite to find. Ear mites are easy mites to find. Scabies are very difficult to find. And Chilidiella are a little harder, because oftentimes you don't think to look for them. If the puppy comes in and it's a little bit itchy and it has a little scurfy skin, you're like, oh, just give it a bath. Well, oftentimes that's Chilidiella. So there are multiple kinds of mites, but ear mites specifically live in the ear canal. And like I said, almost always are in cats. We can see them very briefly in a dog. And, you know, as a young dog that comes in, I'll look in the ear canal, I'm like, oh, yeah, interesting, there's mites here. But you can get rid of those pretty easily, because they really just don't want to live in a dog's ear canal long term.
And do you see them in the dogs when they live in a multi-pet household, like a cat and a dog, or only?
Yeah, you can. Okay. Yeah, you can. And if the cat has a bad enough mite problem, it might share them briefly with the dog. But, you know, as soon as you treat the dog's ears for anything, yeast, bacteria, whatever, the ear mites move out, and they'll pretty easily eliminate in dogs, but not in cats. So it's a whole different gig.
And so cats, you're going to know they have mites because they're scratching all the time, and they get that. All I remember is it looked like coffee grounds in their ear.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a great description. It's not blood, but it can look like blood. But the cats can be so intensely itchy, paritic, that they will literally scratch the back of their ear raw. Because, I mean, like I said, if you have hundreds of little creatures literally walking around in your ears, then you can see them very easily. And you can see why it would be so uncomfortable. And
you're giving
and so,
me nightmares, Marty. Just, you know.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And I'm also going to just go down one of my pet peeve paths here. And that's that itching is something that is a sensation, but you can't see an itch. Paritic is the description of itching, but it's scratching, biting, licking, you know, whatever that is. Those are the symptoms. But itching is a feeling, a sensation, and you cannot see an itch. So my staff will come out of the room and say, the dog is itching. And I'm like, can you see the itch? And they go, no. Okay, then describe what they're doing. And then they'll say, licking their feet, biting their paws, licking their belly, scratching at their ears. So just like I said, to be really clear about nomenclature, we want to make sure that we're using the right terms. So it's typically not an allergy in the cat. When it's ear mites, you can treat it. You can get rid of the mites. But sometimes the sensation of the itch perpetuates, because there's always going to be just a little low-grade yeast infection left behind that may need treatment from time to time. Even though the mites are gone, you might still have to treat the ear canal for the ongoing debris and intensely itchy sensation left behind.
Wow. Poor kitties.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's tough. It's tough. So it kind of looks like the debris you see in a dog's ear when it's a yeast infection. Mm-hmm. Typically in dogs, we'll see that dark brown discharge associated with the yeast infection. This is more of a dry, crumbly, that dark brown color, but it's dry and crumbly. And some people will think that it's blood. And there actually can be some blood if the cat's scratching at their ear. Now, are there other things that can make a cat scratch at their ears? And the answer is absolutely yes. And I actually saw one yesterday. And that's typically, if you look in the ear canal and you've used an otoscope and you've looked under the microscope and you can't find mites, the cat very likely at that point is going to be diagnosed with a food allergy. Not a pollen allergy, not mold, not the things that we see dogs with, but the typical description of a cat with a food allergy is it looks like they're trying to scratch their head off because they're really intensely itchy around their head and neck. So we can see that associated with food allergies, and those can be a real challenge to try and take care of because you have to go through a food elimination diet. You probably are going to have to use something for the pruritus, the itching, scratching, biting, licking, chewing. That may include a steroid. It may include one of the other drugs like Atopica for cats that helps with allergies. So we do have some other treatments if the cat has that. But if it's a food allergy, getting rid of the thing that they're allergic to, the food component of their diet they're allergic to, is almost always the best treatment.
So in dogs, generally, they'll be, if it's a food allergy, they're generally allergic to a starch. Is that the same in cats? Is it the grain
either,
or the protein?
Yeah, either a protein or a carbohydrate is typically what they're allergic to. Yeah. So you can certainly see those things. And it can be a little tricky to try to figure out what they're allergic to. The cat I saw yesterday had had a recent change, not of the brand of the food or the flavor of the food, but to a different bag. And so I suspect that there was something different in the manufacturing process that they had substituted something else in. So we're going to be doing some investigation on that. And sometimes it takes a phone call to the pet food manufacturer because the label may look the same. It may not be that they changed anything on the label because it was similar enough that they weren't required to, but it can be enough of a change that if they're sensitive to something that you can't really detect from reading the label or looking at the packaging, that you might have to call the company for. So yes, oftentimes it's a protein or a carbohydrate that they're allergic to. So it can be a little tricky, and it might be a treat.
A mystery.
Yeah, it can be a treat that you're feeding. It doesn't have to be their primary diet. It might be a treat. It might be that you left a bowl of the empty bowl of ice cream or the empty bowl that you had your cereal in with some milk in it in the sink, and the cat got up there and had a little snack. So it can sometimes take some detective work to try to figure out what it is. There may be somebody that comes into your home and feeds your, like, slips little treats to your cat you don't even know that they're doing. So it can be a little challenging sometimes to figure it out.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
Kitties. So in the prevention department, back to the
yes.
ear mites, if they get them from other cats, how do we prevent them from ever getting ear mites? Is that even a thing?
Well, there really isn't a preventive the way we have preventives for flea and tick products, but the same things that kill fleas and ticks. So Revolution, for instance, in cats, that is a good preventive for flea and ticks, and cats can get ticks. Mm-hmm. And again, ticks are arachnids. They're eight-legged. Fleas are six-legged. Ticks are eight-legged. So ticks, like mites, are eight-legged. So a lot of the products may not say that they prevent ear mites, but they oftentimes will. If it gets rid of ticks and it gets rid of fleas, it'll likely get rid of the ear mites as well. So you can use Revolution as a preventive. There's Brevecto for cats. There's a number of products that are on the market, all the flea and tick things like Advantage and Frontline and all those things. Those will effectively treat them. So you could preventively do that. But many times, we see a lot of kittens that come in that were just found. I had one yesterday, you know, that they heard at 1 o'clock in the morning, this little tiny kitten that was outside their window, and they went out and rescued it. And so there's definitely a lot of cats that come into our lives. And oftentimes people have several cats in the house already. A kitten shows up at their door. Somebody
wow.
dropped it off, or it showed up. This one was under the hood in the engine. So they had to go out and fish it out. And so you'll bring that kitten into the house and you're like, oh, wow, it's really cute. But it might have lice. It might have fleas. It might have ear mites. It might have leukemia and FIV. So as soon as you bring in, worms, intestinal parasites, as soon as you bring a new kitten into the house, if it's 1 a.m, bring it in, warm it up, feed it something, and then first thing in the morning, call and get a veterinary appointment, because mm-hmm. we want to test the kitten for leukemia and FIV and make sure that they're not exposing your cat. We want to check for mites, check for lice. Lice are something that we don't see a lot of, but people kind of forget about them. They're still a thing. So very quickly, we're going to want to get those kittens in and get them treated, dewormed, put on Revolution or one of the other flea and tick products. And Revolution will do heartworm. It does all kinds of stuff. So we want to get these little guys cleaned up as fast as we can. And some of them are under a pound. Some of them are really itty-bitty
little
babies.
Things.
So
get them in. And so if you have like a rescue kitten of any kind, I assume you keep that separate from any other cats in the house until you get it.
Right.
Right.
Right. So you deparasite it and you check it for viral diseases, make sure it doesn't have an upper respiratory. It's going to go sneeze on your 14-year-old beloved cat and make it sick. Mm-hmm. So yes, you want to keep them isolated. So put them in a separate room. If your garage is warm enough, you can do that. Or you can do them in a bathroom or a laundry room or somewhere. Even a dog crate is at least some kind of seclusion until you, so you can put food and water and a litter box and all the things in there, and then get your first appointment possible in with your veterinary clinic to get all those things checked out, because it's way easier to treat one kitten than it is to treat the whole household of eight and then realize that you've got a whole mess on your hands. And I've seen older cats get really sick from a young kitten because they weren't current on vaccinations. And people oftentimes don't think about vaccinating their adult cats because they don't go outside. They never have exposure to other things until one day this kitten shows up and walks into your house and the cat is exposed. And I don't want your old beloved cat or cats to become ill from a new kitten. And it's not that the kitten isn't valuable in your life, but it needs to be screened for health clearances before it moves into the general population of your household.
I think that's fair. I was just thinking, having once myself acquired ringworm thanks to a cat, ringworm, I don't see it much in dogs, but I see it a lot in cats. Can you talk about that fungal, right?
Right. Right. And a lot of people think that what they see on the dog's belly, that are those round spots where they have little scurfy looking collarettes, that that's ringworm. And oftentimes it's staph. It's almost never ringworm in dogs. But yes, ringworm in cats is relatively common. Again, there was some really interesting work at the University of Wisconsin a few years ago by Dr. Moriello, and she was looking to see if normal cats, cats without any skin lesions, could carry ringworm. And the bottom line was probably not. So if the cat has a patchy hair loss area, especially in the face or the forelegs, then that's oftentimes ringworm. So handle the kitten carefully, wash your hands well, don't cuddle it up next to your neck and your face unless you really love to have ringworm on your neck and face. And then again, get it checked, and we can culture for it. We can check with a special light to see if we suspect that it's ringworm. My dear husband used to do dairy cattle work for 20 years, and he would every other winter, not every winter, but every other winter would get ringworm in his beard. Because he would reach under calves and do stuff, and then he would touch his face. And he had enough immunity to only get it every other year. So he'd have this patch of hair loss, and the doctor would say, well, you need to shave your beard. And he'd say, no, I don't think so. And so he would just treat it, and on he would go. He would never truly shave the beard off, because that's just too much a part of who he is.
That's Dr. Tan, that. For sure.
Yeah. But it's really easy, especially for kids and people who are immunosuppressed, to get ringworm. So you want to be careful that, like I said, they're not snuggling the little kitten in their bed at night until you've got it checked out and make sure that there isn't any indication of patches of hair loss. So Dr. Moriello did a really interesting study, and she would brush these cats that belonged to veterinary students and the veterinarians at the vet school, and they would culture things, and they would culture really interesting kinds of fungal disease off of these cats, oftentimes things like athlete's foot and other parts of your body that you can get fungal infections. There's a nice word for it, but I'm not going to drop it today. But she would find those things on the cats, because clearly the cats were either sitting in people's laps or rubbing up on their toes or their socks at night, you know, when you lay on the couch and take your shoes off. So the cats would have these spores of the fungal on their coat, but it didn't cause them to have ringworm per se. So there's a lot of different kinds of fungal infection that can cause skin problems in people and in pets. So we have to be really clear that the cats were not carrying these diseases, and that a cat that's got a normal coat probably does not have ringworm. It almost always has normal coat. If it looks normal, it doesn't have ringworm. If it has a patch of scaly hair loss anywhere, ear, face, front legs, then yeah, you really should be getting that tested and treated. And ringworm's a little tricky to get rid of. You have to treat it for a long time.
Yeah.
So yeah, like,
happened to me as a kid, I'm saying.
Yeah. So hold the kitten with a pair of gloves on.
I really want everyone who's not watching YouTube to just come to YouTube for this particular episode to see all of the horrible faces I'm making. Not
it's
being
lovely.
A cat person, this is all completely horrifying to me. I got jock itch from my cat. I mean, I'm sorry. I can't right now. I truly, this is a Sunday morning on one cup of coffee. I'm going to lose it.
But we're entertaining people at least.
Okay, great. So final question on this topic. Holy crap.
You started it.
I did. I totally did. It's my fault. I own it. But okay. So we don't talk very often in the cat world, I think maybe as often as we should, about acquiring a pet cat, a kitten, from a breeder to get mm-hmm. a cat or a kitten that has been raised such that they are less liable to have some of these, my skin is still crawling, I will never stop itching sorts of things. Talk right. a little bit about that.
So most of the time, kittens that come through the breeders are going to come from health-tested parents. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, we do x-ray some cats for hip dysplasia. Mm-hmm. There are DNA tests that are being developed for cats. We are looking at specific things like the natural bobtail gene for cats. Mm-hmm. So there's some interesting things. These kittens are typically raised in households where they're in a more controlled environment than a shelter or the random cat that shows up at your door that, you know, a lot of people
off
come
the street.
In. They're a coworker, a neighbor, somebody found this kitten in the dumpster, and so they bring them in. So these cats are raised in more controlled environments, which has its benefits, but it also has its downsides. Some of these kittens are more likely to have things like Trichomonas, which is a very difficult parasite to get rid of. It causes diarrhea. It can be tough to get rid of. Sometimes we'll see kittens with FIP because they came through breeders. So I don't want to say that all breeders are devoid of these diseases, because sometimes we actually see more of them, not less of them, in certain settings.
Interesting.
But like purebred dogs, the purebred cat world has predictability of traits. So if you want a floppy cat that's just going to lay on its back and be great with the kids, it might be a ragdoll. If you want a cat that looks a little more exotic, it may be a Highlander or a Bengal. If you want a Siamese that is very talkative, you know, those are some really interesting traits. So we can definitely see traits in cats that are predictable and that people find that they really enjoy. So there are definitely places for purebred cats. There are cat shows, just like there are dog shows, but the cats don't get put on a leash and walk around a ring. The cats are held up and then they're judged.
They do this like pizza fling kind of.
Right. And then they play with a little ribbon toy and they, you know, they judge the kittens. So, you know, there's absolutely a place for the purebred cats. There are cat breeders that we work with, and they're really enjoyable to work with. They have a lot of really interesting things going on. So, yeah, there are definitely benefits, but there are definitely some downsides as well.
Okay.
So there is, but I'm just going to say one sentence about this, and we're not going to go into depth, but there is a new treatment for FIP now that is approved in the United States, so we can actually treat FIP successfully if we need to.
Tell us what FIP is, because some of us are not cat people.
Sure. It's feline infectious peritonitis, most commonly seen in kittens, and it causes a fluid development. If it's the wet form in the abdomen and or the chest, if it's the dry form, it happens in typically older cats. But for many years, we've known about it. I knew about it when I graduated from veterinary school 44 years ago, so it's not a new disease, but we have a new treatment. For a while, it was kind of being black market bootlegged into the country, but now we have an actual approved treatment, and there are some changes in the treatment. So if you've had a cat treated in the past, it's a different course of treatment. It's a shorter course now than it used to be. So it is an option. We did do a whole segment on Revival on feline diseases. So if anybody's really interested in some more information on that, you can pop over the Revival website about feline infectious diseases and watch that webinar.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. So if you have a kitten with coffee grounds in its ears, it needs to go to the vet. That's my takeaway.
Yes, and keep it isolated from your other cats, and don't let it sleep with your four-year-old child until it's all checked out.
Yeah, speaking as that once upon a time. Okay, excellent. Marty, thank you so much. I really appreciate. I know we have lots of multi-pet households that are listeners, so we want to make sure that we have good, solid, reliable kitty information to share as well. So
thanks,
Marty.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog. And we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.